Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. You can, however, send in a question for our next episode by shooting an email to upfront@kpfa.org. You can also tune in for the next edition live and ask your question over the phone then. We normally air Monday mornings on KPFA just after 7:30 news headlines. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls.
I'm Philip Muldery, sitting in for Brian Edwards-Tiekert here on Upfront. On this Monday morning, it's time for Corona Calls with Dr. John Schwarzberg. John is Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley's School of Public Health. John Schwarzberg, welcome back to KPFA.
Thank you very much.
So, John, I've got a lot of questions for you, but we will be opening the lines later in the half hour to allow our listeners to get in on the conversation. There seems to be a new variant of the coronavirus called FLIRT, F-L-I-R-T. Am I correct in assuming that this variant is quite widespread and is quite symptomatic, if it's true what I've heard?
Sure. Well, FLIRT's been really bothering us tremendously since the late spring. It's wreaked its ugly head up in late May, and it's really caused a major problem in June and more so in July. But like this virus has always done, it continues to mutate. That is, it continues to change. And these FLIRT variants have now got some spin-offs to them that aren't really called FLIRT anymore. The biggest one is called 3.3.1.1. And this is what seems to be causing a lot of the disease right now. It's even more transmissible and more immune evasive, meaning it can evade our immunity even better. So we've been really getting hit by FLIRT and some of its spin-offs since late spring. July was a bad month. August is looking even worse. We are clearly in a surge right now.
So what of the symptoms? Is it more symptomatic than what we've experienced already?
We don't think so. When I say we don't think so, we don't have an awful lot of data on this, but all the indicators suggest that it's no different in terms of the symptoms it causes compared to its predecessors. So the current circulating variants and subvariants are causing very similar disease to what we've seen previously. That's good news. You know, it could be we could wind up with another Delta, which was much more serious. But fortunately, we have not seen that since Delta caused tremendous problems in 2021.
So again, you should run down the symptoms as opposed to me doing it, because I did get COVID once and I could describe my own symptoms, but I'd rather you describe the symptoms that we should be paying attention to.
Well, your symptoms are really worth hearing about because they probably were pretty typical. But here's what we're typically seeing. In people who are immunized or people who are in good health, are people who are not too old, typically what we're seeing is cold-like symptoms. Runny nose, sore throat, maybe a little bit of cough, so maybe it's gone down in the airways a little bit. Sometimes the eyes are red, conjunctivitis. Sometimes we get sinus congestion or ear congestion with it. So it looks like a bad cold. But for some people, it's worse than that. It's more like influenza, in the sense that it causes fever and severe body aches and lots of fatigue. Fatigue is really a common denominator here. And in some people, it's much worse than influenza. So it has a whole spectrum of activity. But the typical thing we're seeing in otherwise healthy people who are young is more the upper respiratory with some lower respiratory symptomatology. Now that's classic COVID right now. A well, small percentage, Small percentage of people, though, go on to develop long COVID, and that's something perhaps we can talk about later.
Well, in my case, it was congestion sort of deep in my lungs with real pronounced coughing, bringing up all kinds of crap from way down there. But I didn't really have a sore throat so much. So again, each one seems a little bit different.
That's right. It really does vary. And you can't count on what you're going to get. With one exception, there was a paper published about 3 weeks ago that suggested, now it's a one paper, it was well done, but just one paper, but it suggested that if you've had COVID before, which an awful lot of people have had, and then get it again, it's typically very similar to what you had the first time. So if you got really sick with COVID the first time, this paper suggested that you may anticipate that if you get sick again with COVID, or again and again with COVID. It tends to be very similar in the individual. So if you had a very mild case, it's likely going to be very mild again, but you can't absolutely count on that.
So I'm assuming that a flirt is also controlled by getting vaccinated. Both Moderna and Pfizer are out there. Does it make sense for people to get vaccinated again? Do you get vaccinated every 6 months for this? What does it matter if it's Moderna or Pfizer?
That's a big question. right now, we're betwixt in between. The vaccine that we used, the updated vaccine that we used last fall, and for some people, again, 6 months later, is fairly distant from what's currently circulating right now. And that's reflected in the fact that the CDC and the FDA made a decision several months ago to go with an updated vaccine for this fall that's much more closely related to the current strains of COVID that we're seeing. That is not yet available. It's going to become available, we're told, sometime in September, hopefully in early September. So right now, the only vaccine you could get would be the vaccine that was designed for what was circulating almost a year ago. Still so, gives some protection, but not quite as good.
So waiting until the new vaccine comes out in September makes a lot of sense.
Typically it does, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's the case for everyone.
Okay.
So for me, for example, I'm at higher risk because I'm over 65. I'm going to wait until the new vaccine comes out, and I'm going to get it as soon as it comes out. For a small group of people who haven't been immunized in a good while, where they've lost a lot of the immunity from the vaccine, or they haven't been infected for a good while, and they've lost a lot of the immunity from previously being infected, and they have something terribly important planned for the next few weeks, for example, a big trip, they may want to consider getting a booster now from the old one and then going ahead, waiting 4 months after that and then getting the new one. That's something that those individuals need to talk about with their doctor, the pros and cons of that strategy. So we're really in an awkward position right now in giving advice. And let me just add one thing. You mentioned that there are the two mRNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, and that's correct. And those are the ones that are being updated, and they'll be available in September. But there's also another one, Novavax, that's being updated, and that should be available sometime in September as well. Novavax is a little different in terms of how it works in our bodies. It's more a conventional vaccine, and for some people, they may prefer that. So we should have sometime in September three different available vaccines for our population.
Well, I have a friend who is quite convinced that she developed tinnitus after getting vaccinated. Tinnitus is a ringing, a hissing in your ears. Do you think that this is a possibility? Do you think that it's just coincidental that these things happen simultaneously?
Well, with any individual case, you know, you can't make too great of a generalization. But when we look at reports of complications from the vaccine, a rare complication has been tinnitus, the ringing in the ears. So it has been reported. Whether it's more likely to occur after the vaccine as opposed to randomly, it's a little difficult to know. But there may very well be an association there. If there is, it's very unlikely to happen to any one individual.
If people want to get in on this conversation and have questions for Dr. John Schwarzberg, you can give us a call at 1-800-958-9008, 1-800-958-9008. Before we go to those calls, I know one of the ways that public health officials are monitoring all of this is to look at wastewater. Our pee and fecal matter in the sewers to see if the virus is appearing in greater intensity or less intensity. What can you tell us about that? And of course, it's different for every sewer system. So one sewer system might report one thing and another a different thing.
That's right. Wastewater has become a very important tool for us because we aren't monitoring COVID in terms of cases or hospitalizations nearly to the extent we were less than a year ago. And this is very, very frustrating and very, very disappointing. So we don't have good hospitalization data. We have roughly around a third of the hospitals in the United States are reporting hospitalization data now, whereas it was 100% 6 months ago. And we're not reporting cases very accurately now. So wastewater becomes our best early warning tool. And it has caveats. You mentioned one that not everybody is monitoring it the same way. Not everybody's using the same testing. So it's a rough correlation with what's happening in the community. Given those caveats, wastewater still is very valuable. And what it's showing now, nationally, lots and lots of the viral RNA in wastewater, very high. In the West, amongst the highest in the country. In California, amongst the highest in the country, wastewater levels. As a matter of fact, the wastewater levels now are approaching, if not higher than what we saw last winter. So wastewater tells us there's an awful lot of people with COVID in our community. I wish we had better data than just the wastewater or additional data to the wastewater, but we just don't have it today.
Well, let's go to the phones. Up first is Ava in Berkeley.
Hi.
Ava, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to you since the very start of the pandemic. I'm 72 and my husband is 75. We are fully vaccinated and boosted. We got COVID for the first time at the beginning of July. One of our daughters lives in Italy, came to visit and feels that she picked it up on the plane. We took Paxlovid. My husband had a strong rebound reaction to the Paxlovid. But my main question is, and we're both fine now. Our symptoms were flu-like. We're going to be visiting this daughter in Italy at the beginning of September. And considering how recently we got COVID, are we in any state of protection? Should we be as masked and careful as we always are when we go on planes? I guess I'm just interested in that. And also, when should we get the next updated immunization?
Well, I think the updated, we answered that question already. He was saying a new vaccine is coming out in September. But the other questions are quite interesting. John, what do you think?
Well, Ava, I'm glad you and your husband availed yourself of Paxlovid, and I'm glad you guys got over that infection fairly well, or quite well, it sounds like. Having had COVID in July is going to give you good protection for at least 3 months and maybe a little bit longer. So July, August, September, you should be covered in terms of your immunity when you travel to Italy with good, not perfect, but good coverage because of that infection you had. The CDC's recommendation for your next updated vaccine would be a minimum of 3 months after your episode of COVID. So it sounds like if you're going to Italy in September, you will not be yet a candidate for the updated vaccine. It would be too soon. You won't get as much bang for the buck if you get it then, but you should have very good coverage from your previous infection. Not perfect, though, which comes to your other question that's so important, and that is, should you do other things? And I look at this as a layered kind of protection. The vaccine is fundamental. It's foundational for your protection. Then you are previously being infected is foundational for your protection. But it's not perfect, so you want to add to that. I would definitely wear not just a mask, but a good mask, an N95 or a KN95, when you're in the airport, when you're in the airplane. And I know it's a long flight, but I would definitely wear it. When you're in Italy, when you're indoors with lots of other people, I would wear a good mask. When you're dining in Italy, for example, try to dine outdoors. It'll still be really warm there. So it should be very nice to be and easy to dine outdoors, which is much safer than being indoors. What I'm saying is I'd add that layer of protection to assure, not to give you 100% assurance, but really give you a lot of assurance that you'll enjoy your trip and not get infected again.
And I would assume Italy is really no different than any place else, right? It's not like Italy is particularly prone to giving people COVID.
Unfortunately, you're right. Unfortunately, all over the world today, it's not just here in the United States, but all over the world today, these new variants and subvariants are circulating and causing lots of disease. So it's not just the U.S. You have to assume anywhere you go on this planet right now, COVID is there.
Okay. Let's go to our next caller. Up next is Charles in El Cerrito. Charles, you're on the air.
Hello, long-term listener. I'll be quick. I have a question about Paxlovid. Took a flight on Wednesday, got symptoms on Friday. More like a flu, no chest and respiratory stuff. Have been vaccinated 6 times. 6 months ago was the last one. And the nurse practitioner said I should take Paxlovid. I can get it at 10 o'clock this morning. So my question is, should I take the Paxlovid for any given reason? It seems like a light flu, and I might pass through it.
Have you tested? Have you tested to see if you're COVID positive?
I tested with a strong red lines yesterday after 36 hours, yeah.
So you have tested positive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it.
John?
Yeah, Charles, if you are at higher risk for a bad outcome from COVID, 65 or over, pregnant, which you're obviously probably not, less than 2 years of age, or any age and being immunocompromised or having other high-risk problems like obesity, chronic lung or chronic heart disease, diabetes. If you're in any of those categories, I would definitely take Paxlovid. If you're less than 50 and in otherwise good health, I probably would take it, but there's not a lot of data to support the need for that. But let me make one other point for you to consider, Charles, and that is that you can't necessarily predict that you're going to have a light case because the case isn't too bad right now and you're 2 days into it. Some people get really bad on day 5, 6, or 7. So I wouldn't base your decision on taking Paxlovid on how well you're doing right at this moment, because we can't predict what direction things may go. So if you're in one of those higher risk categories, I would certainly concur with the advice you got, and that is to take Paxlovid.
Let's go to our next caller. Up next is Sherry in San Francisco. Sherry, you're on the air.
Thank you. Dr. Schwartzberg, I have dodged this virus for 4 years, and finally it got to me. And I was out at a club on Friday. I became symptomatic on Sunday, tested negative on Monday, and then I had the worst sore throat I have ever had and total exhaustion. I tested again on Wednesday. It was positive, and I started the course of Paxlovid. So I have two questions, and I'm fully vaccinated and fully boosted. I have not had a rebound. I took my last Paxlovid yesterday. If I do get a rebound, what is the period that I might be contagious for? And if I don't get a rebound, I am assuming that my symptoms started 8 days ago, that I am no longer contagious. So I did go out yesterday for the first time, and I was fully masked. So those are my questions.
Got it, Sherry. In terms of rebound, it could occur a day after you stop the Paxlovid, or several days, or maybe a week after you stop the Paxlovid. If it does recur, then you are contagious again, and you have to go through the same isolation protocol. One word about Paxlovid, though, and rebound. Everybody is associating rebound with Paxlovid, but two very good studies last December showed that rebound occurs just about as frequently if you take Paxlovid or if you don't take it. In other words, rebound is part of the nature of this disease. So a lot of us have stopped calling it Paxlovid rebound and just calling it COVID rebound, because it occurs pretty much the same whether you took Paxlovid or not. In terms of the isolation, the CDC, you certainly fall into the CDC's category of wearing a mask for a total of 10 days when you're out in public, staying isolated from everybody for the first 5 days, roughly, and then a mask for the last 5 days when you're out in public. So you should stop wearing your mask when you're at day 10, when you're in public indoors. The one thing you could add to that that would tell you about contagion is you can do a rapid home test. And if that test is negative, it doesn't mean you're not contagious, but it means it's very, very unlikely you are. On the other hand, if that rapid test is positive, let's say you tested yourself today and it's positive, I would be more careful because it does suggest you're still contagious.
Well, on that note, we are out of time. I would definitely listen in to you every week because I've got so many questions on this topic. And I know we left people on the line, Janet in Richmond, Dan in Ithaca, New York. Sorry about not getting to your calls. But again, Dr. Schwartzberg joins us every Monday at 7:30 a.m. Pacific time. John, again, is clinical professor emeritus of infectious diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. John, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for the next one, you can shoot an email anytime to upfront@kpfa.org. Or you can tune in live. We normally broadcast Mondays just after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people, and we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.